Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 45 years now, and every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we all get together and sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and learn from each other and teach each other and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 to try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you wish to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to reach Paul or ask him to take a look at a NASA-related story or a space-related story, you can reach him via email with the address spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page of interesting articles that I've seen throughout the week. I cut and paste them and publish them once a week and put them on the Internet for you to take a look, and you could pull them down and read them at your leisure. They'll stay up for a long, long time to come. You reach that page by typing into your browser's URL text field, roy.ac2gs.com. Chat is still down, unfortunately. We offer an audio stream of the Technical Net, mikecast.com. And also, I'd like to remind everyone that mikec2nj I has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. And there's a lot of material from people who've moved out of the area and others from people who unfortunately have become silent keys over the years. So their wisdom persists in the form of audio files, and I urge you to check it out when you have some free time and listen to some of the smartest guys in the hobby. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we have planned for tonight.
I have emergency messages.
Okay, Wesley?
Yes, sorry for interrupting you guys. One is less unexpected, and one is very much unexpected. A few seconds ago, Mandani made announcement for state of emergency for city of New York and five boroughs of New York. That's more expected. Not expected is if you guys have a family members or the people vacationing in Mexico. 2 hours ago, that was February 22nd, 2026, is today. Nemesio Oserguega, El Mencho Cervantes, the leader of Jessico New Generation Cartel, and six others were killed in security operation by Mexican Army in Tapa, Jessico, Mexico. The important factor is that all Mexico is right now in fire. Thousands of cars are burnt. There are reports of decapitated bodies. 15,000 of Canadians are left without help. I didn't hear much about American casualties, but gang members, in revenge, start to shoot landing aircraft. With the passengers, all of the airports are closed right now. It started from. Let me drop. Okay. It started from Guadalajara and Puerto Vallarta airports. So, if somebody has a family there, contact them. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay. Thank you very much, Wesley, for that information. We'll have to keep an eye on that, and I hope no one out there has any friends and relatives who are visiting Mexico these days. Visiting other countries with kind of tourism has not been going very well for the world in the last year or two. So thank you, Wesley, for the information. I wish everyone well, and I hope it settles down and control kind of takes over and removes the chaos. Of course, if anyone has any emergency traffic for the storm announcement, feel free to advise me, and we will make time for you. But for now, let us get back to the technical net. We don't have anything particularly special. A couple of very, very short comments to talk to you about artificial intelligence, and we will go to the main segment and ask for questions and topics and comments, and I'll ask people to hit the push to talk and give me their first name, their call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. We'll try to go down the list as best we can. Hopefully that should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul will join us for the SpaceNet Report, WS2N, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If my shack works correctly and the repeater works correctly and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. So that's what we got planned. So let me drop for a second, and I'll give you a real short little couple of little comments about AI, and let's begin. Okay, nothing really revolutionary in the world of artificial intelligence. Their Anthropic's Claude has been incremented from 4.5 to 4.6. So again, one gets the sense that, you know, either they're not scaling it very highly or they're waiting for something to happen. But Anthropic now is 4.6. People who use WordPress, a ubiquitous web hosting piece of software, has integrated AI agents into it, so I'm sure that's going to be loads of fun dealing with. And there's still surprisingly a lot of talk about OpenClaw. We mentioned it the last few weeks. It's a kind of super agent. It kind of collects other agents and expects you to give it a lot of your information so that it can be your servant and buy things on Amazon if you give it your credit card or control all kinds of aspects of your life. And unfortunately, it's not terribly secure, so a lot of people have broken into other people's OpenClaw and wreaked havoc. Other people have simply had their bank accounts emptied because it uses tokens, and if you give it the information, it'll go directly to your bank and withdraw the money for credits for tokens for AI and such. So that's wreaking havoc on everyone. And there's YouTubes that caution people that it's not ready for prime time, and others who kind of wax poetic about it. So, you know, it depends who you listen to. I would listen to the people who caution you. So that's kind of it, unfortunately. Nothing really special, no dramatic improvement in anything. The scaling issue seems to still not be talked about too much, but there seems to be an issue. And if they don't scale it up, it's going to hit a wall, and there's going to be problems financially. But we will see how all that works its way through the coming weeks, months, and maybe a year. That's my AI report. If anyone has any comments about AI that they'd like to ask or talk about now, you're free to hit that push to talk. So, okay, of course, you're free to bring up artificial intelligence later on the net, if you're so inclined. But for now, let's go to the main segment, questions, comments, and topics. If anyone has any of those, I would appreciate if the first few are amateur radio related, but if not, we certainly will accept any science and or technology-based question or topic, and I'll try my best. So with all that in mind, we're open for business. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or just science and technology.
Weather stations.
Say again, unfortunately, you doubled with Wesley.
I said it's N1YDY. My name is Hank, and my question is about GPRS. I'm not sorry, not GPRS. Weather stations and APRS. That's what the letters I was looking for. Sorry about that.
Okay. Hank recognized. Wesley, you want to go on still?
Yes, I am, but take Frank first.
Okay. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
And Donnie, N2TH. Best way to calculate radiation resistance of an antenna.
Okay.
Okay, 2HAL checking in, no traffic.
Okay.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, just listening. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for any questions or topics or comments for tonight? Okay. So, Hank, exactly what is your question for tonight?
Yeah, thank you. My question is about APRS and weather stations, 20-some weather station that I interfaced to a KPC-3. None of that equipment do I have anymore, and I was wondering if anybody still does this kind of thing, and if so, what are they using today?
Okay, let me throw it out to the audience, because I don't particularly play around with weather stations. I have my local ones. I have a whole bunch of different applications that they kind of show me graphic displays of it, so I'm kind of weathered out. But if anyone has any experience with any of that, please hit that push to talk. Yeah, I had an idea that we were going to get that kind of response. I don't know what to tell you, Hank. You know, I mean, we're kind of there are so many different sources for weather reports, even with NOAA being under budgeted these days. That I don't know. I mean, I know APRS is still alive and well as a means of text messaging and IDing people's geolocation. But I don't know that much about what it's doing for broadcasting local and distant weather reports.
So what are you using for weather, graphic weather depictions?
Oh, I have a bunch of them. I have some things on my cell phone that gives me the satellite report, and I can follow, weather patterns. I can follow clouds and such. Again, there's just so much. I mean, I have a little gadget on my computer screen that I'm staring at now that gives me the full week's weather report, and if I go over it, it expands to more detail. It's I could look it up and see what it's called, but
maybe if you'd be willing, could you just shoot me an email of what you're using? My call at yahoo.com.
Yeah, sure. I'll do that for you, Hank.
Thank you. N1YDY clear.
Okay. Wesley, do you mind if I take the gentleman who wants to talk about radiation of antennas first? That probably won't take us that long.
Of course, take him.
Okay, what exactly is your question?
TVH Mobile, which is the best formula to use to calculate radiation resistance of an antenna? There's like three of them. Of course, my phone just died right now, so it's essentially... one of them is 80 times pi... Jesus, I'm trying to do this from memory. 80 times pi squared divided by wavelength. There's like three of them. I'm just trying to figure out which one would give me, you know, the best result for a monopole.
Okay. You're talking radiation resistance or something else?
The radiation resistance of a monopole.
Okay. I don't know about approximations. Usually, a lot of people have gotten used to these antenna simulation software, and one of the values that it offers is radiation resistance. Have you ever tried any easy NEC-based antenna simulation software?
No, that's why I'm asking the question. Just a quick... like three of them, just wondering which one would be the best. If you have one that the software gives you, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, you just go. There's about two or three generally available antenna simulation software programs based upon a primary algorithm that I think is run by a major South California University has the gets paid to upgrade it, and the license for the latest and greatest is about $100, but you can get the last generation algorithms for free. So just Google easy NEC and find something that is available, and you plug it in. I think it's the easiest way to get a more accurate assessment rather than, go for approximations. You know, nowadays, since we have the access to computers with sophisticated algorithms, it probably gives you the best results.
Okay, thanks for the 411. Yeah, like you say, they generally want, their subscription or something like that. But I'll poke around and see what I can find. Thank you.
Okay, it's only for the latest and greatest algorithm. The freebies that they give away at this point are relatively very accurate unless you have something very esoteric. So... really don't need the I forget if it's 6.0 or what, but you really don't need the latest algorithms. The free ones will most likely serve you very well.
Go Yankee, TVH Mobile Clip.
Kogi Dok, thank you for your participation. So, Wes, what do you got for us tonight? Wesley, are you out there? I think we're having the empty carrier thing going on again. So if there's some way that you can kind of boost your signal, against the other guy, try something. Wesley, are you out there? Because I'm not hearing anything.
It looks like I have to use other means. Hold on. It's not me. Somebody's coming here. Hold on. Okay. So we're talking about radiation, radiating resistance. I don't know how much of that you heard.
I didn't hear any of it.
Go ahead.
I didn't hear any of it. It was all blank, empty carrier.
I have a problem to hear you right now. Just a moment. I'm going to try on radio one more time.
AC2GS. According to what I'm looking at, Echolink is picking me up fine, so I don't know why you don't hear me on Echolink.
Now it's okay. Now it's okay. Okay, so I was talking about radiation resistance. Did you hear my comment on it?
No, didn't hear you at all.
Okay, so radiation resistor, it's the recoil force on accelerating charges in the antenna. So that would be energy radiated as electromagnetic wave, and the antenna represents resistance to the current corresponding to radiated power. And that is radiation resistor. So it doesn't have anything to do with ohmic resistance like this.
Yeah, we've talked about radiation resistance a lot in general when we talk about antennas. You want something with a significant amount of radiation resistance, because as you decrease the radiation resistance, the ohmic resistance produces greater and greater loss. A perfect example of that is a magnetic loop, where you can have radiation resistance that's a tenth of an ohm. So any kind of insertion loss in the construction of a magnetic loop will provide much higher ohmic losses, and so a lot of the energy that you put in through the transmitter, instead of coming out as radio waves generated from radiation resistance, will come out as, unfortunately, ohmic waste heat. So you just get infrared energy and heat coming off of it. So it's important that you limit the radiation resistance, just so that the underlying efficiency of the antenna has a chance. Again, magnetic loops are really nice, but with that minimal radiation resistance, any kind of insertion loss that you don't remove is going to cause a greater and greater inefficiency to the emission of radio waves.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I just wanted to hear your comment on it. Now, what I have today. A little bit confusion. So, start from LoRa. So, LoRa, 433 megahertz and 915 megahertz. That's the most common for low power, low distance, low bandwidth digital communication. And it is used for APRS, which would be automatic packet reporting system, right? Telemetry, forming mesh, and that's why I started with it. So it's forming mesh networks, to connect devices with relying cellular infrastructure. And then we could talk about technology, application, mesh networks, and whatsoever, APRS implementation, and LoRa versus, let's say, LoRa One, wide area network. But then it comes a company, Retevitz. I sent you the email about them, Retevitz. And suddenly, in the section related to mesh networks, they offer, so mesh networks was for me like a digital messaging, no voice. They offer RB91, which is direct frequency portable digital radio repeater, with RB24 UHF handheld radios. And it's $229 altogether. So you have two radios and a repeater. Again, the company name is Retevis, Retrevis. And I'm kind of confused what one has to do with the other, because then later on I would like to talk about mesh plastic versus mesh core. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay, well, my suggestion, once again, rather than just kind of throw everything up against the wall, is take it with the first part first, and the second part second, and the third part third, et cetera, because inevitably, if you kind of do it this way, I'm going to not remember half of the questions that you throw at me. Retevis, as far as I'm aware, is another Chinese brand radio. So, you know, whatever they think they can make a couple of bucks off of, they manufacture and they sell. It doesn't have the prestige of the Japanese models, but they work. The problem with LoRa is, well, not particularly a problem, but it's not an amateur radio band, and so it's you can use it without a license. It's designed for implementation using different technologies. You mentioned two of them. Meshtastic is a mesh-based, LoRa-based operating system, and MeshCore is a completely different variety of the same type of thing. They both have slightly different feature sets and work in different environments. Meshtastic strikes me as more of a quick and dirty setup. It doesn't really allow for too many hops on the mesh. I think two hops and you're done. So, you know, if you need to use a third hop because the distance between you and your contact, you're out of luck. That's where something like MeshCore, which I think is capable of as many as 64 hops, from the first radio to the last, is certainly more flexible that way. I think you have to set up specific repeaters for MeshCore, whereas Meshtastic can sort of act as its own repeater locally. So they use LoRa. They have similar purposes, but they're kind of designed slightly for either a less organized ad hoc setup like Meshtastic, or a much more vigorous designed setup like MeshCore.
Okay, so I'm going to somehow repeat what you said, and you can correct if I understand it properly. So we have a LoRa, long-range radio, operating on 433. We're talking about application frames, 433 and 915. So 433 megahertz and 915 megahertz, 915. Close to the first band operated by cellular phones, not any longer. And then it was used for off-grid It is used for off-grid messaging, APRS, telemetry, and forming mesh networks. Now, if we take the last part of the sentence, forming mesh networks, to connect devices without relying on cellular infrastructure, are we talking about mesh core and mesh-tastic? I assume mesh core comes from Austin mesh. Back to you.
They're both different non-compatible operating systems using LoRa frequencies and setting it into each of their own mesh systems. So, again, you can't use one on the other. So, but a lot of times you could use the same radios. You just have to change the firmware because the underlying hardware specifications are very similar. It's just how the hardware is used that's different and non-compatible. So, you know, you can't just take a mesh core radio and without changing the software operate on a mesh-tastic mesh. And again, they're from different groups of programmers, and they offer different limitations and capabilities. Mesh-tastic is kind of more of a, you know, build your own and, you know, talk to your neighbor. And mesh core is sort of a much more organized situation with a specific type of repeater hardware that allows large groups of people to communicate and allow for much more hops and much more distant networks than mesh-tastic does.
Yeah, I found something, I believe, that's on the subject matter. Think of sending whisper across the playground. With mesh-tastic, everyone passes through whisper along, so the chain can move and grow as people move around. But they stop sharing the message after it's passed through seven people. With mesh core, only special helpers, repeaters, means repeaters, pass the whisper, but they can pass it up to 64 more helpers. Back to you.
Yeah, I think mesh-tastic is only capable of two or three hops, though. But mesh-core is capable of 64. Effectively, what happens is as you build your mesh-tastic network, and the farthest branches get farther and farther away, it's very common to drop packets and such because it's too far away for a couple of hops to suffice. So it's a lot less forgiving than mesh core, which, again, has 64 possible hops so that, you can get your network expanded to a farther distance. The edges of your net can be significantly increased with mesh core, plus it utilizes dedicated repeaters for that function as well. So it requires more engineering because you got to put up your own repeater as opposed to let the mesh-tastic radios act as kind of sort of repeaters on their own. So, you know, if you're looking for something simple with a couple of friends, then mesh-tastic is fine, and that's kind of the default LoRa-based mesh system that people have been using. But if you kind of start to grow it, you're going to hit walls all over the place, and that's when a lot of guys will switch into mesh core.
Okay, so if you don't mind to take a look at Monday, February 16 email that I sent you, there is a picture that I have to send you. No, that wasn't to you. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find out how we can place into that whole picture. Retrevis. R-E-T-E-V-I-S. Retrevis RB-91. With RB-24. So RB-91 would be direct frequency portable digital radio. And RB-24 would be UHF handheld radio. Yeah, I didn't send it to you, I'm sorry. Okay, so we have two radios, have a repeater. The problem is that mesh plastic and mesh core, I understood as purely digital format for texting, not for voice. And for some reason, when I was cruising for mesh core and mesh plastic, it shows up Retevis, and it shows two radios. I say, what am I looking at? I know it's a DMR, but then the question is how far DMR is far from those networks. Back to you. Was I doubling with you?
Again, this is AC2GS. Hopefully, I'm back. I got thrown off of Allstar. What else is new? Wes, what have you been saying lately? Because I missed you.
Yeah, I was asking RB91 with RB24 from Retevis where that is being placed on the whole picture when you are talking about mesh core and mesh-tastic, because I was being sure that both of them are only digital text messaging networks, not the voice. And all of a sudden, it shows up those two radios for voice with the repeater on that section. Of course, they say it's a DMR, so my question is how far DMR is from those networks. Back to you.
As far as I'm aware, yes, Paul.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was gonna. I tried to key up before, but the light flashed at my house here. Anyway, yeah, the mesh-tastic topic. That was a presentation that was given by him last general meeting at Limark. And they record that, and they put it on to the YouTube station, you know, the Limark YouTube station. So, you know, it just gives you good information about, specifically, mesh-tastic. Back to you, Ryan.
Yeah, he's been kind of all over the place. They found him on HRU, and he gave a talk at Limark, and this March, he's going to give a talk over at Kings County Radio Club. I'm sort of surprised he didn't bring up the subject of mesh core. You know, they're similar but different. I assume from what you described that he didn't bring up mesh core, though.
I might have missed it if they brought it up. Although I had a good connection, I was on Zoom for that. Anyway. Very well done. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Getting back to you, Wes, it has probably nothing to do. It's not a mesh network. It's probably just the APR, the digital channel within DMR. It's just an aspect. You know, there are DMR handy talkies, the Anytone, you know, the latest and greatest version of the 878 is capable of digital APR decoding, but it has nothing to do with mesh-tastic, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, okay, thank you very much for straightening it out. Now the next one. Okay, so before we go further, so coming back to LoRa, we're talking about proprietary spectrum modulation technique. As far as I read, it was delivered by Samtec, and that's for long-range communication by Hopink, and uses very low power consumption. I understand that low power consumption comes from narrow bandwidth of the communication. That allows the signal to go further. Am I right?
Theoretically, yes, you could have it go longer. It picks up less noise, but also you're decreasing the symbol rate, so there's always a price to be paid.
Okay. Now, so to straighten it out, it is point-to-point text messaging, and we can send number of different things. We can talk about GPS, temperature, humidity, and it is rather comparable with something that was traditional packet radio. Is that correct?
Yeah, you could use it's basically a means to convey text. So if you put in sensor readings, it's sensor readings text. You could put the Constitution of the United States there too. So it's kind of an open edge. It's just text based point to point with hopping and mesh formation and reformation algorithms thrown in. For a little bit stronger, consistent reception.
So what is the difference, if any, between LoRa and APRS?
Well, LoRa, as far as I'm aware, is primarily a frequency and radio technology. It's not really... You could run mesh with LoRa. You could run mesh with any type of transmitter modulation and what have you. So when you're talking about APRS, you're talking about not a mesh system, as far as I'm aware. You send a signal. If it gets to the repeater, then it gets merged in with the database on the internet. But mesh is specifically built to be kind of as unbreakable as you can. It will act like the internet. If a node gets disrupted, it will try to reform the mesh around that node and still get to the final site. Whereas APRS is not a mesh node technology. It simply sends a signal to a local repeater, and if it doesn't get there, it doesn't get there. There's no other options. There's no reforming a mesh network because there is no underlying mesh network that's being used in this technology.
Okay. And now the last one, LoRa versus LoRa One. So my understanding is that LoRa is simplified, LoRa 1, where LoRa 1 should be strict infrastructure and sort of heavy. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know the difference between LoRa and LoRa 1. Again, it's more a technology of modulation and the frequency, as opposed to things like Meshtastic and MeshCore, which is the underlying algorithms that operate the mesh and repair the mesh and deal with any kind of breaks in the mesh. So as far as I'm aware, you can tie Wi-Fi to a mesh network, and it'll do pretty much the same thing. So they're two different aspects of a transmission mode. Obviously, if you're going to have a mesh network, you need to define what the parameters of the frequency and the modulation of the signal might be. But the underlying situation for mesh node operating system software is how you handle the meshes and how you deal with disruption of the mesh nodes.
Okay. The next one is, I believe, left. I don't have anything more, unless I check you back out. I think the video... hold on, let me go to that. Yeah, that was on February 20th, Friday, 2 days ago. It was about what we came from TVS documentary. Did you have a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what it has to do with anything, but yeah.
Well, the primary question was, that was in the video, but not very widely discussed. When the cold-blooded dinosaurs became mammals, I mean, not mammals, they became warm blooded. That was the primary reason that I sent you that, because as a doctor, I hoped that at least you might be closer to the subject matter. Back to you.
I mean, basically, it was okay. There's someone echoing my audio, so if, out there, if you're echoing my audio, please don't echo my audio. Anyway, it basically was just a special to suggest what the first true mammal was in evolutionary terms. You know, we're often told the story of, you know, 60 million years ago, when the meteorite struck and killed off all the dinosaurs. Mammals of that day were small rodent-like creatures that were just getting stepped on. But because they were small and didn't really need that much food and could kind of burrow down, that they protected themselves, and you know, they ultimately came to be one of the apex predators and evolved into things like ourselves. So this was kind of going back a lot earlier to previous epochs that exterminated large numbers of living organisms and left at least one or two branches of proto-mammals out there. So it was interesting for what it's worth. I don't know exactly how you plug it into our technical net tonight here, but, we're descended from, all the way back to single-celled organisms. So, one of the many branches, there were marsupials that were kind of proto-mammals, but not quite. They didn't feed their infants via a breast. They had pouches in the cases of kangaroos and such. So, yeah, there was a point where there weren't mammals and then evolved into mammals. And then mammals evolved into all kinds of mammalian life forms, including human beings.
So the primary question was that we are coming from therapists. The creatures look like reptiles, but we're starting to develop mammalian traits and survive multiple global catastrophes. So I would say, thanks to the meteor, we had a chance to evolve. Because other than that, that would be dinosaurs that would eat us. But when you're looking at that about today's dinosaurs, which is birds, they are warm-blooded. So, and they are not mammals. So I thought it is the best what I can do. Just ask Dr. Roy. Maybe he would be able to put some light on it. Back to you.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to know for sure. I mean, we've changed our minds a great deal about dinosaurs through the years. And, back when I was a kid going to the Natural Museum, no one in their right mind would suggest that dinosaurs had feathers, but they did, many of them. And the chances are probably that dinosaurs were warm-blooded. So, you know, they're not reptiles. They're you know, their own species that, as you mentioned, in the same way that the only mammals that survived the destruction of the dinosaurs were these little runty things. The dinosaurs that survived were also little runty dinosaurs who over time evolved into all manner of birds, parrots and chickens and what have you. So they're just as much dinosaurs as anything else. So I don't think you could, you know, if you asked someone 100 years ago, they probably would tell you that dinosaurs were more like lizards and such and were cold-blooded. But I think they were warm-blooded animals.
Okay, so understanding would be that we were reptilians. No. First we came from single cell organisms, but then creatures came from water. They were cold-blooded. And then developing of worm bloodnet, deadnet, the fourth lineage that preserved against all odds came when? Did that came with first dinosaurs? And now we have a warm-blooded dinosaurs of today? Or how is it? Back to you.
Again, no one has complete and utter proof, but the suggestion is that animals like T-Rex and Triceratops were warm-blooded. In you know, it goes all the way back to the early Jurassic era.
Okay, so that was probably all. Let me see if I have anything else for you. Yeah, that was something, but I'm not prepared for it. I sent you the two YouTubes. That would be, is it possible that you could do it on TechNet? And that's all modulation. One is all modulation, the other is QAM. But I wasn't preparing myself for that discussion. So we can take it next week if you want to. It's up to you. Back to you.
Well, it's kind of relatively easy to discuss amplitude modulation and frequency modulation and phase modulation, because everyone had to pass a test on that who's listening, who's at least transmitting tonight. The problem that you get into is the quadrature amplitude modulation. It's kind of damning to try and get people to understand what you're talking about without illustrations. Again, there's a bunch of things that words are really good for, and there's a bunch of technology that the pictures are much better for. And I think quadrature amplitude modulation, all the different types, although very important, because modern radio equipment kind of basically runs off of those. Cell phones run off of QAM, and other technology uses QAM. But the problem is trying to convey this information over just the radio strikes me as a challenge that I don't think many people would suffer. By the way, that the YouTube that you sent me on the subject, it was very annoying. It seems to be a synthetic voice, and unfortunately the synthetic voice doesn't know how to deal with cosines. At one point it called cosines cosines, and at another time it just called them causes. So whoever is in charge of the synthetic voice device should teach it what a cosine sounds like to speak.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay. Analog modulation, amplitude modulation, frequency modulation, phase modulation is sort of easy to explain. But when we come to digital modulation methods, I thought
that
Dr. Roy would have a method to explain it with his much better English. Talking about quantum, I'm not sure if you are able to explain it back to you.
Yeah, again, I don't think anyone's grasp of the English language will suffice. It requires illustration. And as far as digital versus analog, there's really not that much of a difference. CW is basically, a digital amplitude modulation, if you will, except that it's going from full on to full off. But I mean, you know, whether it's creating digital information or analog information is simply how you agree to process the RF signal, because ultimately the RF signal is going to be analog itself. You know, it's either phase shift keying or amplitude modulation like Morse code or frequency modulation. It's primarily the same thing. It's when you get into esoteric stuff, which is, again, very useful. QAM is able to squeeze more information because it's encoding not only the amplitude but the phase measurements in the same signal. And then if you have a strong enough signal, you could then change it from a simple 1 QAM to 4 QAM to 16 QAM to 32 QAM to 128, and every time the number increases, the limitations of noise brought to the signal gets worse and worse and worse, but you can pack more data into a smaller bandwidth. So it's fascinating, it's interesting, but I'd probably rather want to explain Smith charts to people without an illustration than QAM.
Yeah, thank you for putting a Carrier CW, unmodulated Carrier CW, into digital section.
I never thought
about it this way. And I'm still having a doubt. With most of digital format, you either have it or don't have it. Because you have a certain level where the signal is cut off. So if you're looking at digital video, let's say, or TV, either have it or don't have it. Not that you have it like the old times with snow on it. But with CW, which is a one by military standard, which is unmodulated carrier, even if it's very, very low, you can still receive it. How come then we should put it into the digital section of the signal? Back to you.
Well, among other things, it's because it has a very, very low symbol rate. It's you're producing very little information, and so signal degradation is much more tolerable for binary ones and zeros over time, as opposed to multiplexing that takes place in QAM mode. So the more information you pack, the more easy it is to disrupt the signal. And the binary nature of Morse code, which really is binary, it doesn't degrade that much. I mean, ultimately, it too will degrade if the signal drops below the noise floor. But as long as it's above the noise floor, it's because, again, the symbol rate is relatively slow. You're not packing a lot of data. It's a stronger means of transmitting information at the cost of low signal, low symbol rate. You know, just think of how long it takes to say hello, how are you, and all the information we sort of take for granted on an audio signal that says hello, how are you type of thing.
Uh,